Mama's gonna beat you to the bright shining sun, to the bright shining sun, oh Lord, to the bright shining sun. Jane Brooks was a big bay horse, he rode a shaggy mane, he run all around Memphis, he beat the Memphis train, beat the Memphis train, oh Lord, beat the Memphis train. Molly, what made your head so red? Running in the hot sun with fever in my head. Fever in my head, oh Lord, fever in my head. Molly said to Tin Brooks, you're looking mighty squirrel. Tin Brooks said to Molly, I'm leaving this world. Leaving this world, oh Lord, leaving this world.
Some poor rhyming here. I went to the fair the other day. That's what this song reminds me of. There's nothing like the fair. It's a good time. So is the Evergreen State Fair, not Puyallup.
Evergreen's not a bad fair.
It's not a bad fair, but it's not as big as Puyallup Fair.
Puyallup's the biggest one.
Everything's bigger in Puyallup, including car sales, I've heard.
There are a lot of cars down there.
Enough. We need to get the show on the road. It's Brian Avee's show every day. I'm not starting over. It's a Brian Vitti show, everybody. It's September 8th, 2010. I still have not fully recovered from the trip to L.A. this past weekend, especially the day that I slept for 3 hours. That sucks. That is twice this month that I've had between 2 and 3 hours of sleep on a particular evening.
That does suck.
That's why I've decided I'm never going on a trip again.
There you go.
Never
good
leaving the house fucking again. But with that said, we're back. I'm 95% here today. I was 90% this morning, but I'm 95% after a full day. So I'm ready to get this show on the road here. We have a lot of stuff to talk about. We need to bang through it here quickly, Vinny. I know that you have a tendency sometimes to really get into these reviews.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
God knows why, but...
I'll tell you why. Because we do no prep, and so I start talking about the shows, and I don't remember what happened. So I have no choice but to read my notes verbatim.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. It's fine if you're reading your notes verbatim on something that's important.
Right.
But a Divas match?
No, you're right, but, well, okay. There are some times I should know.
You don't even need notes about a Divas match, usually.
No, you don't.
The match was bad. Somebody won. Let's move on.
Yes.
So, we're going to do more of that here today. Now, I do not want you to run down the entire TNA pay-per-view, because...
I don't want to do it either.
I don't really like TNA, everybody. But you should at least tell everybody a little bit about the top matches on the show and some of the earth-shattering angles that went down on this particular evening.
Not sure they even have earth-shattering angles. We had the Machine Guns versus Generation Me. It was explained that London Brawling was not there due to a personal issue. So they had a good match. No surprise. I went 3.5 stars. It was... like every Motor City match ever, where the wrestling's really good, but then it should be better. They had the heat on Shelley, and he hit some counters and laid them out. And then rather than do all the men down and do the dramatic build of the hot tag, he immediately leapt to his feet and tagged him Saban. And I was like, all right, whatever. So it was a very good match, but should have been better. And then afterwards, they did an angle where Generation Me laid them out. So they are now heels.
Good.
Evil, evil men. This, by the way, after Mike Tenay had been talking about what good Christian men they were earlier in this match.
Mm-hmm.
So, way to go, TNA. They hit Shelley with a double elevated DDT off the apron of the floor. And he was incapacitated. And then two guys came out and they lifted him up and they helped him walk to the back. No stretcher job, no neck brace, but they did something. So, that was all right. He had Douglas Williams versus Sabu in a very sloppy match. All sorts of blown spots and 400 dives. And Sabu went through a table. A chair got used until it was time for the ref to not let them use it. Then he pulled it away and Williams won the belt shot. It was missable. Madison Rayne had a crappy match with Velvet Sky. It was bad. Somebody won. Velvet won. So they didn't even bother building a challenger to the title unless Velvet's going to challenge Angelina Radford to get back together. That was bad. We had Rhino and Abyss in a Falls Count Anywhere match. They hit each other with stuff. They went through a wall on the stage, under the ramp, and then out a wall on the other side of the stage. There were no thumbtacks. There was no glass. They did not use a table after Sabu did. They used a guardrail, And Rhino went for a gore, hit the guardrail, and turned around into a black hole slam for the pin. Place was going crazy for the finish. It was fine. He had a lot of notes on that match. Kevin Nash and Sting versus Jeff Jarrett and Samoa Joe. All I remember about this was the announcers going on and on and on about how none of this made any sense, and they don't know what's going on. And they wish they could tell us what was going on, because they know the fans are confused, too. So Jarrett hit Sting with a bat, and Joe choked him out. And that was that. We had AJ Styles versus Tommy Dreamer in an I Quit match. They also use all sorts of weapons. The only thing I remember here was the finish, which was AJ got a fork, much like Abdullah the Butcher, and he held it into Tommy Dreamer's eyeball.
Much like Abdullah the Butcher, you say.
The only time ever I would ever say those words. But yes, AJ was like Abdullah here. And he held the fork in Dreamer's eyeball. It looked pretty gruesome. Dreamer was squealing and screaming when he quit, so it was effective. And that was that. I was really, really drunk by this point, so I can't tell you how good that was. We had the best match of the show by leaps and bounds, Kurt Angle versus Jeff Hardy. The short description here is they had a half-hour draw. But TNA could never do anything that simply. So first they had to do a 20-minute draw, and then 5 more minutes, and then a 25-minute draw, and then 5 more minutes, and then a 30-minute draw. A draw stopped due to blood stoppage.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt could not continue, so it was a draw. That's TNA, everyone.
Yes.
They can't just say, go wrestle for 30 minutes, the time will run out, and you'll have a great match. No, everything has to be complicated and stupid. So it was really good. Had a lame finish, and the last 10 minutes was not as good as it should have been because of the time limit interruptions. The story, I guess, was that each time the match was stopped, Kurt had the ankle lock on, and Jeff was saved by the bell, but it doesn't really matter. It was TNA using a pay-per-view to build to a free show. And then in the main event, Pope versus Ken Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
A poor main event. Crowd did not take it like a main event. They did not wrestle like it was a main event. They had a slightly above average impact match. It was the impact match where we see what happens during the commercial. And Anderson won with a mic check. And then he proceeded to, I don't know what happened. Or maybe there's lots of stuff fucked up in this match. Maybe Pope was just beating the fuck out of him the whole time. But he stood over Pope and shouted something very angry. I definitely heard the word fucking. I don't know what's going on. Pope left and shot him a double middle finger. Anderson took a bump for this. And then the show ended.
You want to know why TNA will never succeed?
I can think of many reasons. But which one are you going to say?
I didn't see this show, but I can already tell you this is why TNA will never succeed. Because they can never do anything right.
Well, that's a good answer.
Here's the example for this evening. So, TNA always has an excuse for doing something stupid. You know what I mean? They'll do something dumb, and you're like, well, why did you do that? And then there's always an excuse. Now, as you noted here, is everybody a blind man could have seen. And I didn't see the show, so I was a blind man. Pope versus Anderson was not following Kurt Angle versus Jeff Hardy.
No.
Okay, a complete moron could have told you that going in. This is not hindsight is 2020. This is foresight is 2020. My favorite saying, foresight is 2020. You could look at this card and go, the Pope and Mr. Anderson are not going to be able to follow Jeff Hardy and Kurt Angle. So, it didn't work. They couldn't follow him.
No.
So, the question obviously is, well, why did you headline? Why did you put Pope and Mr. Anderson on last? And the explanation is, well, didn't want to go off the air with a bad finish. So, why did you book that fucking finish?
Why did you book the bad finish? Whose fault is the bad finish?
Whose fault is the fact that you had a shitty finish for Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy? Why could you not have just had Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy go on last, and Jeff Hardy wins, and you do it in such a way that you need a rematch? Perhaps Angle gets a visual pinfall, and then Jeff Hardy wins. I didn't even think about that. That's just the first thing that came into my mind. If you gave me 5 minutes, I could write down a list of 10 better finishes than what they did here. And then you could have closed with this match. Why didn't they do that? Because they're complete idiots. Was it really that fucking important to do a draw here? You know what I mean?
And again,
it really so important that you had a shitty main event on your show? I don't know.
And if you're going to do a draw, just do a time limit draw. You don't need multiple 5-minute periods and a blood stoppage. No.
Of course you do. You have to book.
You have to write.
You have to write.
The show has to be written.
It has to be written by a writer.
Idiots.
So anyway.
There's also a point in this, speaking of idiocy, there was a point in this match where Kurt Angle was laying on the black mats outside the ring. Jeff Hardy went up top and hit a senton from the post to the floor. Shockingly, Kurt Angle was injured.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to believe. He then wrestled 20 more minutes in a great match without looking injured, so he's the man. But still, don't do stupid shit, guys. No one's going to remember this.
Let's talk about some fun. SmackDown.
Okay.
Not the best show of all time.
The first hour may have been.
But I love Alberto Del Rio.
I edited your newsletter Monday, and I got... I wrote something in my notes that you repeated in your notes, or your write-up, which was, Alberto Del Rio is my favorite wrestler.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. And something else you said, which is true, I was complaining about why do they take his mask off. Because this man's face needs to be seen.
Yes.
There was a point here, we'll get to it in detail, but he re-aired the recap of himself taking out Ray and injuring his arm. And when they came back to live TV, they had a close-up of his face. He was beaming. His smile was so big, he could barely keep his eyes open. He was so happy with what he had done.
Yeah.
A fantastic man.
Alberto Del Rio came out in a white suit, which was even better. And there were balloons, Mexican flags.
It was a fiesta.
Lackeys in the ring. And he talked about how proud he was of beating up Ray. He destroyed a piñata. By the way, we'll talk to Chris here about this on Wednesday, but we never mentioned this in the recap this weekend, but I did in fact attend a birthday party on Saturday night for Jubs' brother with Chris Hero, who proceeded to go into a giant bouncy castle in Jubs' brother's backyard and do a series of flips, and then we saw them bust open a piñata. This was a fucking awesome night. Anyway, with all that said, they destroyed a piñata here. Unfortunately, nobody jumped up and down in a bouncy castle.
Yes.
But Christian came out. He made fun of Alberto Del Rio. They teased a confrontation. And by teased, I mean they agreed to do it another time.
Yes.
They made you wait because this is professional wrestling. You don't give everything away unless you're TNA. And then Drew attacked Christian. And that led to a match with Christian and Drew, which I did not want to see, mind you. But it ended up being all right, because Christian is great, and he also beat Drew with a cradle, which made me laugh, and fine opening to this program this was.
You're actually glossing over some of the greatness of Alberto here. After he broke the piñata, he turned to one of his lackeys, said, "Champagne, por favor." He got him champagne. He said, "Let's make a toast. For me!
Yeah.
For Alberto Del Rio! Because I'm the man! And handsome, and powerful, and rich! I'm everything!"
Yeah,
he is
everything.
He is everything. And then Christian came out, made jokes about Juan Bradshaw Layfield, and Alberto did a mock laugh and said, "This clown thinks he's really funny!" And then they did the stare down and stuff. He's also, by the way, I had forgotten this because it's been so long since I've seen him, and I've only seen him on WWE with Ray. He's huge. He's several inches taller than Christian, who is not small. So I'd forgotten that, too. So that was the best segment of the year. And the match, I thought the match was a lot of fun, too. I thought Drew looked really awesome, particularly where Christian came off the ropes of the body press, and Drew caught him and turned it into a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker. That was cool. And
so, in other words, Christian did a great job with Drew.
Yes.
All right.
Christian got a grip match out of Drew.
I just mentioned that because I was watching Brandon Gatson in PWG all weekend, and I think he had three matches. And shockingly, in the match with Chris Hero, he looked really good. And in the matches with the other guys, he didn't look really good. So I attribute that to Chris Hero, in fact.
Let's see.
Michelle and Kelly had a match. It sucked. Although, Michelle was funny when she was about to do a move, and she screamed, "What's this, Layla?" And then she did the move. She was very proud of herself. And Kelly made a horrendous comeback, and then Michelle beat her. Sucked. Talked way too much about it. Did a goofy thing with Hornswoggle. They're trying to teach him how to speak English, which I could have sworn he spoke for several months in WWE. He's since forgotten it. And ended up with a doctor recommending shock therapy, but he ended up with the shock stuff on him. And then Teddy and Hornswoggle ran off.
He ran off as he was getting shocked and the room was filled with smoke.
This was not a good segment, Vinny.
I can't say I hated this, but if others do, I don't blame them. Hornswoggle's beard, by the way. Wow. This puts CM Punk's beard to shame. It may be longer than CM Punk's beard on a much smaller head.
So his head's the same size.
Is it?
Yeah. It's his legs that are really short.
I see.
Dolph Ziggler and Chris Masters.
This was the worst attempt ever to rip off Ric Flair versus Lex Luger.
Yeah.
There were chops. There were press slams. There was a very botched Flair flip.
I was embarrassed by that Flair flip.
There was a slingshot.
You know, it was like Ziggler decided he was going to try a Flair flop for a flip into the corner for the first time in his career in this match on TV.
And they didn't edit it out.
You can't do this at a house show.
No.
You can't try this before the show. You decide to try it here on television. And I'm giving the benefit of the doubt. If this was not the first time he ever tried, it's even worse. So it sucked. Dolph won. Yippee. Big Show against Punk and Gallows. Show worked him over forever. Punk got the heat. Show made a big comeback. Pinned Gallows. And the storyline here is that Punk and Gallows are now finished. Punk gave him the GTS. They're splitting them apart. There's no more straight edge society. Joey Mercury is probably fucked. So is Gallows. Serena already is fucked. So I guess we'll see what happens.
I did like either you or Dave wrote they were splitting them up to make Punk a singles act.
Mm-hmm.
Did I miss Punk's tag team title run? I thought he was a single act with friends.
Well, sure, but now he's a real singles act.
So nothing changes for him, and the other guys are just screwed.
Jack Swagger did the VIP lounge with his guest, the former Bunkhouse Buck, Daddy Swagger. So they're doing this segment. Swagger puts over his dad. Dad talks about how proud he was of his son when he won the push-up contest back in the sixth grade. Swagger drops down to do push-ups. Daddy Swagger counts very poorly.
He was counting much faster than Swagger was doing push-ups, which made it better.
Swagger did about a million before they finally played MVP's music, almost surely as a rib on Swagger. So MVP comes out and gets into this big argument with MVP. A brawl begins. Swagger attempts to hide behind his father and ram MVP with the wheelchair, which his father is in. Daddy Swagger took a bump. Swagger got low-bridged outside, and then MVP gave Daddy the ball and elbow. This was, like, funny, but given the circumstances, how it sounds on paper, and the fact that Jack Swagger's dad was there, this should have been 1,000 times funnier.
All I know is in the past 2 weeks now, we've seen MVP was schooled in the takedown challenge, just humbled. He then responded with poor sportsmanship and losing his temper. And he came out here and beat up a helpless, defenseless, injured old man.
Mm-hmm. With a neck brace.
With a neck brace. What an odd feud.
Cody came out for a match with Fat Hardy. He made fun of his gut, his spare tire, his soul patch, his broken nose. What a message this was to young Matt. Matt literally is increasingly immobile. He walks slowly. He does his spot slowly. He is very large. I'm a little concerned about him. This has been a quick fall. I shouldn't say from grace, but it's been a quick fall.
From wherever he was before.
So
I just like when Matt Stryker, who stood up for Alberto and defended him for attacking Rey Mysterio and injuring his arm, establishing himself as a heel announcer, here he started making excuses for Matt.
Yeah, he was explaining that Matt's so hurt he can't train.
Which I'm sure is partly true, but
well, I wonder if it was like a subtle burial. Like, he's too hurt to train. He can walk.
He can wrestle.
He can wrestle, but he can't lift some weights.
I don't know.
He can't eat less food.
He can't walk on a treadmill for a while.
Anyway, Cody beat him clean. And then finally, we got a fucking Kane promo. Listen, Kane's delivery is pretty good, but he's delivering the most shitty, horribly written dialogue. I was thinking about this. As I mentioned with Dave, the first time I saw these men wrestle, WCW was not only alive, but they were winning the wrestling war. The first time I saw these men wrestle was 4 years before September 11. We are almost at the 10-year anniversary of September 11.
Yes.
I saw them wrestle 4 years before that date.
There are many people in the audience who were not born when this feud started.
Let me look online, and I'm gonna Wikipedia 1998, for example, and let's look at some of the occurrences that happened in 1998. These things had not happened when these two men had feud, began their feud. This may take a while.
Oh, okay.
Paula Jones accused Bill Clinton of sexual harassment. That had... Wait, let me think about this.
What year did that happen?
This was 98. That means that, Kane and Undertaker were feuding prior to Paula Jones accusing the president, Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was the president. We have been through... George Bush was president for two terms, and Barack Obama has almost been president for a full term, and Bill Clinton was in his last term when these fucking men started feuding. Think about that for a while. The Lewinsky scandal. They were feuding before the Lewinsky scandal. What else do we have here?
How old do you think, for example, Evan Bourne was when they started feuding?
Very
Seven?
Young. Probably right around there.
Maybe eight.
All right, keep going here. I'm going to...
Well, this segment went for like 20 minutes. But it was Kane doing wacky talking. He said he had stolen Undertaker's powers. Kane cut this promo, by the way, from the big screen. He said he had stolen Undertaker's powers. Then the Druids brought the casket to the ring, and Kane was in the casket, and he laughed. He started talking more. Undertaker came out. He did his full entrance, so that took forever. He got in the ring, ready to kick Kane's ass. And then the lights went off, and when they came back, Kane was gone.
I cannot believe they began feuding before the Lewinsky scandal. Mm-hmm. That's so ridiculous. That is completely ridiculous.
So the story here is literally that Kane has stolen Undertaker's superpowers. So they have turned this show now into a giant cartoon. I don't know if that's a good thing. I've seen worse cartoons.
Jesse Ventura was elected governor of Minnesota. They were feuding before that occurred. Before Jesse Ventura was the governor. Amazing. You know what else is amazing about time?
It keeps slipping into the future?
It does keep on slipping.
Mm-hmm.
Slipping. I'm not going to do it. I don't need that drop. No, but think about this. Like, kids that are born this year. Think of all your friends. Those of you that are in your 30s and 40s. Maybe you just had a child. But think about all your friends, or maybe you know someone that had a child that was born in 2010. These kids that are born this year are as far away removed from 9/11 as I was from the JFK assassination in 1975. I'm a little farther away than they are from September 11th.
When was JFK shot?
64. 63.
So yeah, you're a little off.
A little off. I've been 12 years. But still, they're 9 years away.
Yeah.
When JFK being assassinated to me is like the Stone Age. It seems so goddamn far away from when I was born. But it was only like 12 years. It's kids that are born today, that's how far away September 11th is so far. Time is moving fast.
We're old, yes.
We are very fucking old.
And getting older.
Well, we all are. I like to think everyone else is catching up.
What?
It's the way I look at it.
Isn't that what she said one time?
It is what she said, but... Anyway, yeah. So again, this feud's been going on. The point of my whole statement referencing 4 years before 9/11 and prior to the Lewinsky scandal and prior to all of this stuff that took place a long time ago, how could anyone possibly care in 2010? That's the point.
Yes.
How could anyone possibly care in 2010?
I don't know. I don't.
I mean, if
maybe those children who are so young, they don't remember the first time.
If somebody wrote a story about Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky, do you think like it would sell millions of copies in 2010? You really do? No one fucking cares anymore. It's ancient history, just like this goddamn feud. When Dave mentioned that they're hoping that this is going to sell the buys for this upcoming pay-per-view.
They are?
Hey, I was watching this and I thought, boy, I hope Raw's got something strong.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Dave's like, yeah, they're hoping Undertaker and Kane's the money match.
The one I just called the cartoon.
You fucking people are going to see another sub-100,000 buy pay-per-view in the U.S., there's no fucking way Undertaker and Kane is drawing in 2010. It's just not. It's just not. Let's move on to Raw. I recapped this yesterday, Vinny, so
Show opened with Nexus in the ring. They recapped last week's show when they destroyed The Undertaker, which was a lie, and they all talked about their accomplishments in the main event. Slater said, and I quote, "I pinned the world champion," or the WWE champion, when he pinned Sheamus. Gabriel bragged about hitting the 450 on Undertaker and Cena in the same night. Wade said that he had devenomized the Viper when he pinned Randy Orton. He was starting to talk about Night of Champions, and Orton interrupted. He said he had taken out two of them in 30 seconds. He would do it again. Then they got an email, and the GM announced that he was booking Justin Gabriel versus John Cena and Randy Orton versus Wade Barrett for tonight. Jericho came out for a match, but before he could start, Cole got an email. The GM was upset that Jericho and Edge basically walked out of the main event last week, and so he was saying that if they did not win tonight, they were out of the title match Night of Champions. So we had Chris Jericho versus John Morrison. Morrison has grown out a beard, as you mentioned, and apparently this week he gave up shampoo.
Not shampoo, he gave up straightening his hair.
I don't know, his hair looked long and greasy. Well, it's always long, but he actually looks like a rock star now, but I don't know if that's a good thing. So, he also gave his glasses, by the way, to a woman who I think was older than him. Not a young child, a soccer mom. So, they had a pretty dang fun TV match. Morrison ended up hitting a Starship Pain, and he was standing like on the middle rope, but outside the ring, so he had to jump over and across the ropes.
He vaulted into it.
Yes, thank you. So, just to make it harder, and as a result, Jericho ended up with a bloody lip. So that sucks. But Morrison won. So Jericho's out of the title match. And he had promised to win the title at that show where he would retire. And he took this loss very hard. This loss mattered to him. He was devastated, frankly.
Sucks to be him.
It does.
And by him, I mean Morrison. He beat Jericho and knocked him out of the pay-per-view main event. And he got nothing for it.
Indeed.
It wasn't even like the guy who beats the guy replaces him. No. It's just the guy that beats you, you're out.
Yes.
Wow.
Alicia wrestled Melina. Alicia cut what will become a running joke when she announced she vowed to become not the unified Divas champion, not even just the undefined Divas champion. Her exact words were, "I will become the undefined champion of Divas."
Yeah.
And they cut to Melina. She was cackling. The announcers had fun with it. They had their match. It was pretty acceptable. Melina won with her guillotine thing. Edge talked to the woo-woo
Alicia
guy.
Alicia is not undefined, by the way.
I'm sorry?
She's not undefined.
I'm just quoting her.
I'm just saying they could have found a
definition?
Smooth chick to...
You're making a
fat joke! Move on!
All right. I'm sorry I didn't get it, Brian.
Jesus.
I apologize. We had Edge talking to the woo-woo guy. Woo-woo guy had this shirt, and it had the WWE logo on it, but it looked funny, and I kept looking at it, trying to figure out what was wrong with it, and I realized it has three W's for woo, woo, woo. That's funny.
He's supposed to be from New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
I was listening to the...
Long Island, I'm sorry.
My favorite show, Art Bell, and they were talking to Lauren Coleman about monsters of New Jersey. There's the Jersey Devil, of course. And various other creatures, one of them which was called the Woo-Woo.
Really?
Yeah. Apparently it was like, Lauren Coleman is like, he's got to be like 70. Maybe he's only 60, but he's an old guy. And he's explaining this monster. And he goes, "It's like a big bird. And it storms out at people and goes, woo, woo, woo." And he made that noise exactly like that. And I thought...
Are you sure it's not Ric Flair wearing only his robe?
It may be.
That sounds more
Flair
like
in a feathered robe.
Yes.
But anyway, I wonder if that's where he got the woo-woo.
No, he is
probably
from,
not. But
he's from Long Island. I don't know how close it is to New Jersey exactly.
Close enough.
Sure. So anyway, Zach wanted to wrestle Edge to prove he could beat him. Edge wanted to wrestle Zach because he knew it was a guaranteed win and he would be safe for his title shot. He spoke to the mystery GM. He demanded he get this match. And if not, he threatened to destroy the laptop. And at that point, everyone cheered. We had a wacky segment with Teddy DiBiase and Maurice.
Suffice to say, they're breaking up.
All right.
They've been together for 2 months. They have absolutely no chemistry. They have no charisma. They're breaking up.
All I know is she started ranting in French, and DiBiase told her, "No French. I don't speak that," and he got angry. I could listen to her speak French for hours and hours. So, something wrong with him. We had Justin Gabriel versus John Cena. See,
that's a loyal man to his wife, by the way, that Ted DiBiase. You know what I mean?
Is he married?
Yeah. They hooked him up with Maurice, and he just can't get into it.
I see.
A loyal man.
I see, yes. He's a man of standards. We had Justin Gabriel versus John Cena. Cena gave him the entire match. Gabriel controlled the whole thing.
Well, except for the beginning where Cena was out wrestling him on the mat with wacky holds.
It did not last long. And okay. Gabriel controlled 90% of the match.
That's much better. I'm all about facts here on this show, Vince.
So
not speculation.
He hit a bunch of cool moves. He hit the Eddie Guerrero top rope Quebrada, the Eddie Guerrero slingshot move, the blue thunder bomb, and then finally Cena did his comeback, and Gabriel went up top, and Cena hit an ugly and scary super FU for the win. That move is officially called the Attitude Adjustment now, which is stupid, but I can deal with it. Michael Cole in this match began to call it the AA.
Not the double A?
I refuse. That's unacceptable.
I still call it the FU. I don't care.
I always call it the FU. We had a preview for Legendary. I'm sure it's a fine movie. We had
actually, it's getting pretty good reviews.
I'm not saying that sarcastically. I'm sure it's a fine movie. But we had a Miz and Daniel Bryan... Jesus Christ. A Miz and Daniel Bryan segment that was... It was not nearly as good as you would think it would be on paper. I don't know what got into Miz this evening.
He sucked.
I don't want
to say he sucked. He was, it's not he unfair. He was below par.
He was mumbling. He was forgetting his lines often. He was screwing up the names of shows. And the funny thing was, it was a promo designed around him bragging about all he had done, and now his dream had come true. He's on WWE Magazine.
Yeah.
So he
supposedly. That did not look like The Miz.
There was a cartoon.
It may have looked like the woo-woo, actually.
It was
someone coming at me with a faux hawk.
Yes.
Did not really look like The Miz. Looked like Jack Swagger.
So, Danielson came out, and I edited your Raw write-up before I had actually watched the show. So, when you said something like, he said he had a $10 haircut and had to wear his gear backstage or security would kick him out. I assumed you meant Miz said this about Brian to make fun of him, so that's what I corrected it to say. No, Brian said that about himself.
Yes.
He buried himself deeply. And by the way, I have gotten some $10 haircuts in my life. Danielson, if he paid $10 for the haircut, got ripped off.
I'll never forget the joke. It's not even a joke, but I was with Buddy Wayne, and he was... This was, again, when I did not have a lot of money, and... He was always impressing on me to always save your money. And so one day I because he always had his hair cut. So I figured he must get a deal somewhere. So I said to him, you know where I can get a $10 haircut? And without skipping a beat, he looked at me and he said, you've already got one. So there you go, everyone.
That's Buddy.
Yeah.
That's Buddy Wayne. So the long story short, Danielson challenged him to a U.S. title match. Miz accepted. They got into a fight. Brian was about to put him in the LaBelle lock when Alex Riley saved. And Danielson overcame him, put him in the LaBelle lock. And Riley was tapping like crazy as Danielson just turned to Miz and smiled at him. That part was awesome. And Miz backed up the ramp and that was it. So yes, this was a great segment on paper that should have been much better in reality. We had the This Week in History segment, which they always do. This week was they were talking about the first episode of Nitro. And they actually talked about the entire history of Nitro. But when this is over, I wanted so bad to go back and watch that first episode from the mall with Liger and Pillman and Luger showing up unannounced.
Yeah.
I bet it would be fun. So an effective commercial. An ineffective segment, Edge versus the Great Khali.
By the way, I can confirm, everybody, that when Great Khali stepped over the top rope the first time to go after Edge on the outside, he did, in fact, fuck up.
Yeah.
He was not supposed to do that. And so Cole flipping out was... I don't know if Vince told him to flip out or if he just flipped out on his own, but Khali did, in fact, fuck up.
Yeah. So
this
first
match
of all,
sucked.
They had a shitty match with retarded TNA-level booking. It accomplished nothing. There was a close-up of the computer, the laptop that revealed there was actually, in fact, a piece of paper in there with all the speeches Cole has to read. Edge won via countout. And so he is still in the title match. This was a goddamn debacle.
Yeah, this fucking sucked. When Kali stepped over the fucking top rope and Cole started cutting a promo on the referee and...
There's five... I don't think Cole is good enough an actor to pull out to have Vince tell him in his ear what to do and have him deliver it this well. Because Kali stepped over the top rope to the floor. It was a battle royal by this point. And Kali goes over the rope to the floor and 5 seconds pass and Cole just says, am I the only one who saw that?
Listen... Cole as a babyface is god-awful, and he cannot deliver a line to save his life. As a heel, he's great. Maybe it's because he's an asshole in real life.
Could be. Or Cole, maybe he's just jaded like us.
In real life, Cole does have a biting sense of humor. I've heard a lot of people say that. So he probably is kind of a dick in real life. Aren't we all?
We are.
Come on, aren't we all?
We certainly are.
But anyway, it's method acting. When he's a heel. And it's great.
Whatever works.
So
with your strengths.
Huge fan of Michael Cole as a heel. And they are, as I noted in the newsletter this week, there are plans for Cole. And you can see them in action.
That sounds so terrible.
No, it sounds great. You can see them in action on this show because little hints are being dropped. I don't know where they're going and God knows they may drop it. But there are little hints every week. Like this week, the GM sent Cole a message on his cell phone.
Yes.
And they couldn't explain how it happened. And Cole's like, I don't know. It's from a mystery number. Just little hints like that. I actually am... madly in love with this Michael Cole storyline at this point.
And Edge in particular, others have mentioned it, but Edge was the first one to come out and really start asking, who is this GM anyway?
Yeah.
So they're raising that story.
But Michael Cole just says, I've received a message from the general manager. I laugh every time.
There are now signs saying, and I quote.
Yes.
And people bring that sign in, so it's working. Josh tried to interview Jericho backstage.
Can you believe they're getting an imaginary GM on a computer to work? Remember when this first started, how fucking stupid this was? When this first started, it was so damn stupid. They had a GM that was on the computer that had an iPhone ringtone text message sound as its clue. You know what I mean? This was so stupid. And somehow they're making it work. And believe me, they don't always make everything work. This is almost like Goldberg in WCW. How have they not screwed this up so far? They've actually made it better.
So Jericho was backstage. Josh Matthews tried to interview him, but Jericho was still too distraught over his loss to even speak. And then suddenly Morrison was there to taunt him and make fun of him. What a dick. This is a sitcom segment. Main event, Randy Orton versus Wade Barrett with John Cena and Edge and Sheamus on commentary, which actually was not nearly the disaster I thought it was going to be.
It wasn't a disaster at all. I was shocked by how well everyone did.
The only thing better than Sheamus saying fella is multiple people saying it back and forth in conversation. Hey, fella, life's not fair. Didn't ask you, fella. That was money. So they had a pretty good little Raw main event. It was much better than Wade's, I don't know if it was his last match, but that match he had with Jericho about a month ago. This is much better than that. And then in the middle of it, who should walk out of the ramp but Darren Young? He won't go away. He vowed, what did he say? He said, I'm not the weakest link, I'm the missing link.
He's the missing link.
At which point Cena, I think it was Cena, but somebody mumbled low in her breath, I don't understand the missing link. He did not like this line. So it distracted Wade, and then Wade turned around and ate an RKO for the win, so Randy won.
Darren Young is the link between ape and man. That's what he's saying.
That's what he said, yes.
He's way back in the fossil record, this Darren Young. What a gimmick.
Which, I don't know if that explains his hair or makes it even stranger. But Randy was smiling at him and jovial and said, come on in, young man, let's shake your hand. And, of course, Darren Young came in and got RKO'd. Then Edge hit the ring.
Like a douche.
He got RKO'd. Sheamus got RKO'd. Everyone was going just apeshit. And the show ended. Cena, the only man in the match that he had not RKO'd, they were having a stare down. People were going crazy. And Orton is so ridiculously white hot right now that for a second, I actually found myself looking forward to a Randy Orton versus John Cena match.
Well, it did not last. Next week, my friend.
It did not last long, but just an instant there, I actually forgot I had already seen them wrestle 8 billion times.
I'm going to play a song. And then you freeloaders this week are in for a treat, a Dragon Gate USA pay-per-view review. The show airs this coming Friday, and as noted on the front page today, The show airs on in-demand secondary channel, on-demand secondary channel. It's not on the primary channel for whatever reason on Friday. And a lot of cable systems do not get the secondary channel. So if you want to see the pay-per-view, you have to wait till Saturday. I believe it's at 11 and 3 or something like that. Check your cable guy. But it is on the primary channel on Saturday. That's your chance to see it. But for those of you that have the secondary on-demand channel, it's going to be on Friday night. So we're going to review that in just a second. But first off, I'm going to play a song here. A Brian, Vinny, and Dave medley. A medley, everybody. From Ryan Morris.
Do you smell what
Dave Meltzer
is cooking?
Dave Meltzer's
playing the bare ass. Dave Meltzer. Dave Meltzer
says, know your role.
And fuck off.
Vidi.
You real fucking bitch.
Fuck you! Vidi.
Masturbation?
I know tonight. What? Vidi.
If you wanna be
Dave Meltzer. Yeah. Stick the whole thing in my mouth. Fuck off. Huh.
I dub that a win. That may be a polarizing song, I think, but I dub that a win.
Alrighty then. I don't know what's happening. Dragon Gate USA. Pay-per-views this Friday, as noted, or Saturday, depending on if you get the primary or secondary channel. I thought as a whole, this was up there with the first pay-per-view. I don't think it wasn't as good as the first pay-per-view, I'll tell you that right now. But it had a lot of very good matches on it. There were no match of the year candidates. There was a match that I gave 10 stars to. But
somehow
it was not a match of the year candidate despite my 10 stars. But I enjoyed the show. It was. We've watched some Dragon Gate shows where they seem like they really drag. This one did not. So let's run it down here.
I actually disagree with that, but
you felt it drag?
By the last 40 minutes of this,
Well, the last match was missing something. Actually, you know what? I'm gonna actually get my main criticism out of the way right off the bat here. Maybe it's a Japanese thing, but. And actually, it's not, because one of the guys who did it was white.
Yes.
Okay, listen. BB Hulk and Drake Younger on this show. In both of their matches, they had their leg worked over. Now, the reason that this really sticks out to me is because today, I was in my jiu-jitsu class, and my instructor was showing this wacky move that starts out in butterfly sweep position. And he shows this move, and it basically involves kind of doing a leg extension with a man, basically. You've got the guy in the butterfly, and you roll back, and you straighten your legs like a leg extension. It's actually an absurd move. You, like, straighten your legs, and the guy kind of shoots up in the air, and then you catch him with your feet on his hips, and then you hold him up in the air, and you spin him around, and you get his back. It actually looks like something you'd see on a Dragon Gate pay-per-view. Anyway, my instructor's a small man. He's about my size, but he never works out. Like, he never squats. He never does leg extensions. So he does the move on this one guy who's like 135 pounds. And everyone else in class, you know, we got a bunch of white belts in class, a bunch of blue belts. This is a hard move. No one can figure it out. So someone's like, well, Justin, why don't you try it on Buddy? Buddy's big. Buddy's like your size.
Big fat guy.
Well, he's not fat, actually. He's just a big guy. You're much fatter than Buddy, Vinny.
Thank you.
Anyway, so he's going to try it on Buddy, and he actually does it. There's a lot of leg shaking involved, and there's a moment where everyone's holding their breath, but he manages to pull it off. So then he calls the 135-pound guy over, and he's going to demonstrate it one more time with a small guy so he can show this technique correctly. And as he rolls back, he goes, "Oh!" And we're like, uh-oh. And we go over there, and his knee is bent, and he can't straighten it.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So, of course, we're like, well, let's yank on it. He goes, no! No, don't touch it! So, you know, we kind of, you know, no one's trained to handle a major knee issue. So he's just kind of, he's sitting there, and he's holding his knee up real close, and he can't straighten it, and we're all Googling on our phones, you know, knee injury where you can't straighten leg, and we conclude that it's probably something wrong with his knee, and...
Way to go, ER.
So, anyway, the point is, we think he dislocated his kneecap, okay. Because his kneecap was not where it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So, presumably, it was dislocated. It's in a different location. So, we have to pick this poor fucker up. I literally had to carry him, like I was carrying him off the battlefield. I had to carry him from the gym to the car. We took him to the fucking hospital. I had to carry him into the hospital. He's crying the whole time. Oh, my leg! So, we'll get him in there and everything like that. Anyway, the point is, this fucking guy ain't running tonight. Okay? He ain't even walking. On this show, Johnny... Or what's his name?
Drake Younger.
I'm thinking of the wrong guy. Drake Younger does his flip off the apron and lands flat on his back on the cement, but sells his leg. And his opponent proceeds to work over his leg for like 10 minutes. Same thing happened in the BB Hulk match. He got his leg worked over for like 10 minutes. Like every possible leg hold you could possibly do. So as soon as this is over, and it's time for these guys to make their comeback, they're running... They're jumping. They're doing springboards. It's like, what happened to selling?
There was not much on the show by anyone. There was, both of our favorite matches. There's a point where Adam Cole took a suplex into the corner, and he came down. I can't even just say on his neck. He came down with his head to the side and twisted as if he was about to lick the center of his back. It looked horrible. And he responded by jumping up and hitting a Northern Lights suplex.
That doesn't bother me.
Why is that?
I'm going to tell you why. I'll tell you why the leg thing bothers me more than that. Because this was actually the theory that they had in Japan when guys would take suplexes and land right on their head. Remember when Misawa... Terrible to use his name, by the way, because one killed him. But you remember when Misawa and Kobashi and all these guys would be suplexed right on their fucking head? Remember that?
Yes.
Okay.
It happened often.
All right. It's hard to fake landing on your fucking head. When these guys took suplexes and landed right on their fucking head, they got suplexed right on their fucking head. Now, they were able to jump up from that. So the theory was, if you're able to jump up from it when it really happens, then in the course of a fake wrestling match, you should be able to jump right up from it. Now, granted, you know...
Okay. Yeah, like wrestlers to try to convince me...
That
damage is being done.
Sure. But the point was, you know, every now and then, if you were really in the heat of the battle and some guy dropped you on your head, you could jump right up from it. You could kick out at one. It's possible. But to me, if your leg is worked over for 10 minutes with a variety of holds, you should not be able to run. You just shouldn't be able to. It's ridiculous. Anyway, that was my main complaint. It was only in those two matches. Like the match we're talking about with Adam Cole... I gave that match 10 stars.
Yes.
That match...
It was...
Let's talk about that match. Actually, we'll open with the opener. Shima
the
and...
The opener should not take long.
Johnny Gargano. It wasn't very long. It was about 8 minutes long.
But it was a very simple match, too.
They worked hard. Did a lot of moves. They didn't kick out of too much stuff. We had a couple of really cool things. And finally, Shima hit a coast-to-coast dropkick. And the Schwein. And then the flying double knees off the top, which Evan Bourne does... And got the pinfall. I gave it 3.25 stars. A fine opener.
Exactly what I did, too. Yeah. I have never even heard of Johnny Gargano before this, but he held his own here with Shima. They did not wear out the crowd. They had a fun opener. My only complaint about this, and it's not even necessarily about these guys, but that double knee drop where you come down with both knees and either side of the guy's head, I think I saw about a half dozen of those tonight, in one form or another.
And then Shima shook hands with everybody, the ref, some dudes outside, offered his hand to Gargano. Gargano was not going to shake, but finally, reluctantly agreed to do so. And then Shima, and I quote, dissed him! Walked away. I laughed. Then we had the best match ever. I can't actually say that.
Yeah, the best match on this show.
The best match on this show. Adam Cole, Eric Cannon, Chuck Taylor, and Ricochet in a four-way. Todd Martin on the Saturday show, or Sunday show, it was a Sunday show, mentioned that Chuck Taylor in singles competition is all right. He watched him in singles competition on Saturday, and he didn't see what anybody saw in Chuck Taylor. Chuck Taylor in multi-man matches? Awesome. I fully agree. Ricochet, my favorite wrestler in the world, trumping Alberto Del Rio, was in this match. And when he came out, I said, and I quote, "Yay! It's Ricochet!" At which point I realized that would be an awesome t-shirt. And I hereby give Dragon Gate USA and Ricochet permission to market that t-shirt and not give me a cut. Although you're welcome to give me a cut if you'd like to. Ricochet is awesome. I did notice watching on the big screen that he's a little clunky running the ropes.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how long he's been wrestling. I know from reading your review, he did gymnastics forever. He's clearly a highly trained athlete, but yes.
I don't even know if he's done gymnastics forever. That was
Gadsden?
Gadsden, yeah.
Gadsden.
But Ricochet's obviously done...
Ricochet's done something.
He's done a fair amount of gymnastics.
Yes, he's done a lot of athletics in his life, clearly. But yes, running the ropes is still very unnatural for him. But everything else he does...
is outstanding.
Yeah.
My favorite spot that he does is where he does a round off, and he punches high into the air and lands on a man's shoulders, and then he spins around into a hurricanrana. That spot is so fucking great. And there was another one into the corner where somebody was in the corner, and you know the spot where you run up the guy and backflip off like you're running up a wall and doing a backflip off of it? He runs up the guy, backflips off onto another guy's shoulders, and turn that into like a spinning head scissors or something like that. Out of this world.
It was pretty goddamn unbelievable.
Yeah. This match had a "This is awesome" chant, and I did not want to kill the fans.
Yes.
Because this was, in fact, awesome. And the finish, actually, the finish would have been better if I'd not seen the exact same finish at PWG. Chuck Taylor and Ricochet did this exact same finish. And actually, I'm not going to complain at all because I only got to see it one time when I saw it live, and I got to see it several times
here
because we kept
rewinding
it. The finish was that Ricochet goes up top to do a move. It involves he basically did a double backflip with a half twist. He missed, of course, because he would have killed somebody. But he missed and crashed and burned in this spectacular manner. And Chuck Taylor then walked up behind him and hit him with the Omega Driver for the pin, which I described, I think, in the newsletter as the most absurdly harrowing tombstone pile driver in history. It fucking ruled. Again.
He grabs the guy from behind like he's going to do a reverse body slam, and then somehow from there turns him over and drops him into pile driver. And a big part of why this was awesome was, in fact, due to Ricochet. Because the way he sold this move...
he landed flat on his head, and his legs split.
Yes. If any of you have a corkscrew, and it's one of the kind where you screw the thing into the wine cork, and it's got the handles that turn down, that's what his legs did. At that exact angle.
Yes.
To a perfect T. So, that was awesome. It was the second greatest pile driver of all time behind Tommy Dreamer and Rob Van Dam.
I think this one was better.
I disagree, but I will not argue.
I respect your opinion. If you watch them both again, I think you would agree that this one was better and far more comical.
It was Rob bounced very high.
I gave this 4 stars.
I went 4.25.
I would have given it 4.25. Actually, you know what? What did I give? I think I gave the PWG one 4.25. Maybe I should have given that one 4.5. The point is,
that one was a little bit better.
This was goddamn awesome. The only reason I rated the other one higher was because it went longer. This actually did not go all that long. It felt like maybe 7-8 minutes. The PWG one went longer. But if ever there's a match that just for pure fun you need to give 10 stars to, it was this match. I love this fucking match.
This was a lot
of
fun.
I'm going to go down later and watch it again, even though it's going to be 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
Awesome.
My only complaint here...
none!
Well, you may turn me down if you like.
What is your complaint?
Ricochet, as you noted, highly trained athlete, looks great. Adam Cole and Chuck Taylor, in great shape. They have real gear.
Oh. Yeah.
Eric Cannon.
Yeah.
Pale. He's white. He has gear that appeared to have been made at home the night before the show, or perhaps in the car on the way to the show. His wrestling was mostly fine.
He was good in the ring.
But his look was literally offensive to me. The fact that...
to you.
Yeah.
You are in better shape than Eric Cannon.
And I have better gear.
Well, yeah. He does not have a gold
he
suit.
He looks like he should only be wrestling in parking lots and shopping malls. Not on pay-per-view.
But he was fine in the ring.
Is that wrestling? Fine.
Yeah.
Look, sucks.
Drake Younger and Naruki Doi. I gave it 2 stars. Mostly because I was so goddamn annoyed at Drake Younger selling...
Well, okay, here's what happened. First of all, he got a promo early in the show focusing on his scars. He said his scars had proven he had lived a hard life, and tonight he would prove he belonged in Dragon
Gate. I knew he lived a hard life, scars or no scars.
Look at him.
Patently obvious.
So, 60 seconds into this match, Drake Younger goes for a dive. Naruki Doi steps out of the way, and Drake Younger takes a flat back bump from the apron to the cement floor. Dumb. Motherfucking dumb. And... to the point where he grabbed his knee. This is where he hurt his knee, by the way, in storyline. And the announcer said, Drake Younger is hurt. And I said, good! You should be hurt for doing dumb things. You should be punished for stupidity in life.
Wow.
So they had their match. And Drake sold his knee until he decided not to. He did his comeback. There was an awesome point where there was one guy who would shout, Nairuki! And all the fans would shout, Doi! And then one guy just went, let's go, Drake. That made me laugh. And the finish was Doi hit about 1,000 slaps in a row, and they kicked him in the head and pinned him. The highlight of this was in the background, as he's slapping Drake over and over and over again, the referee is selling these like a mofo.
Yeah.
He's selling his own face, he's selling horror, he is selling pain, and then he jumped in to count the pin. I think the referee was my favorite performer in the match.
It was a memorable finish because he hit him with like 50 consecutive palm strikes. And the announcers are basically saying like, oh, Drake Younger, that's going to piss him off. He's probably going to fire up. And then he didn't. He just got dropped and pinned.
It turned out it just hurt him badly.
I got an addition to the story about my instructor. He'll kill me if he hears me telling this story. So he's in the... I'm trying to get him out of the car at the hospital. He's in the front seat. His knee is up to his chest. He can't straighten it. He's like, oh, my knee. And I'm trying to get him out of the car, and I'm trying to shift him so that his legs are pointing towards the outside. And all of a sudden, there's a girl walking in the ER, and he's like, oh, my knee. Oh, she's hot. And I look over, and I look back, and I said, she may be 15. And there's a long pause, and he goes... I can't see, my knee's fucked up. And then he goes, ah! And then I helped him out and brought him in. That was a moment I wish I could add on tape.
So what you need to write down for when you write your screenplay, you can get that line in there. Yes. I can't see, my knee is fucked up.
Yes, it's exactly what he said, I swear to God. It was a pure theatrical comedy moment.
Listen, do you smell something?
What?
That's a Ghostbusters line.
Oh. All right, let's move on here. Scott Reed and Rich Swann.
Scott Reed, who was accompanied by Nicole.
Yeah.
This is the worst names ever.
She's just a girl.
So is Scott Reed and Rich Swann. They're just men. Now, the good news is they looked great.
Yeah, they're very athletic.
Scott Reed looks like a small draws.
I should have known when I saw Scott Reed and Rich Swann what this was all about, but I actually didn't figure it out till it was over. They come out. They did a whole bunch of moves. The match went about 3 minutes. Rich Swann got the win with a standing 450. He jumped a couple of times.
He jumped straight up and down in the air.
And then did a 450 splash onto the man and pinned him. So it was actually really good for 3 minutes. And then Brody Lee came out and he killed these men. He killed them with death. He beat the fuck out of them. He booted them hither and yon. And then he saw the girl, Nicole, in the corner, and he gave her a running mafia kick as well. And it is a Dragon Gate USA crowd, everyone. So when he kicked the girl in the face, everyone chanted Brody Lee.
They were in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Yes. So the announcers were trying to talk about what an atrocity this was. It should
no
have
one
been.
Thought so except them.
It should have been. It did not come off that way.
No. The fans loved him for the violence against a woman.
And so he said that he was not afraid to take on men, women, or, and he pointed to Rich Swann, a child.
Yeah.
Then he said he'd be back next time, and he said he was coming for a Japanese man.
Yeah.
That gets funnier the more I think about it.
People chanted his name. Yeah. This was entertaining. Then we had Gran Akuma, Akira Tozawa, Yamato, and John Moxley against Yoshino, Quackenbush, Jigsaw, and Hollow Wicked. An elimination match. I think this would have been better as just a one-fall match.
That would have helped.
I really enjoyed this for the first half, and then it kept going for a long time.
Yes.
And in the end, I gave it 3.25 stars. It was a good match. It had a good finish. It went on too long, but, you know, if
without looking at your notes, do you remember one move from this match?
There were about 18 Gallerias.
There was that. Okay.
That was like the story of the match.
The story of the match was Yamato kept hitting Gallerias and pinning people with them until he tried one on Yoshino and he kicked out.
But no, I have much more vivid memories of Yay, It's Ricochet,
yes,
than I do of anything in this particular battle.
This match, it killed me. Really, well, the main event was probably not going to be very fun on its own because they did the same thing there. We talk about the steamboat rule, which is you don't just take 10,000 moves in a row. Fire back once in a while. There needs to be a reverse to that rule, which is every once in a while, you have to let one side get an advantage. If both sides just take turns hitting moves for 20 minutes, I will stop caring.
Well,
and I stopped caring on this match.
Well, you stopped caring on this match because you'd seen a lot of stuff. Because if you look back at the Ricochet match, I think it was a Ricochet match. Which one was it? I think it was a Ricochet match, actually. I wrote it down here. Oh, yeah. It was a Ricochet match. It was one long comeback. It was one, like, 8-minute comeback. And it was awesome. Sometimes it works. I think that there's a... I think the problem is that there's, like, a limit. There's, like, a time limit involved. Maybe it's just for me. Like, maybe some people could watch high spots for 3 straight hours and not get tired of them. Alan Farrell,
like,
for example, probably
tired,
could. I can't. 7 minutes, 8 minutes for the Ricochet match was, like, perfect. It didn't go on 1 second too long. Although, if he would have kicked out of that goddamn pile driver...
That would have sucked.
But he didn't. The pile driver beat him. Like, it should beat any man. Anyway, the point is, there's, like, a limit to how many moves my brain can process, I think. And in that match, as an elimination match, there were just too many moves. So, I guess if you're okay with 15 minutes of moves, this match is for you. If you're limited to 7 to 8 minutes of moves... Watch the first 8 minutes, and then don't watch anymore. But again, 3.25 stars. I thought it was a good match, good finish. Came down to Quack. The finish was actually good. Yamato distracted the ref and fouled Doi. And he tried to foul Quackenbush, but Quack avoided it. And then Doi kicked Yamato low. And then the babyfaces put the heels in dual submissions, got the double elimination and the victory. Fine lucha finish.
Editing this is going to be fun because Naruki Doi was not in this match.
Oh. Who am I looking at
Yoshino?
Here? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Hopefully nobody heard that.
There were a million men. No, I don't blame you.
There were a million men
doing a million things here. Maybe Naruki Doi was in this match at some point. I'm not sure.
he was not in this match.
There was a lot of cool
Yamato,
stuff.
Yamato, everybody. Yamato.
But, yes.
I guess he kicked Yoshino. Anyway. Go on.
Yeah, there was a lot of cool stuff.
I am not a racist, everybody.
I will say...
It's been a long fucking weekend.
I wasn't implying that.
It's been a long fucking weekend.
When this is over, the live crowd gave it a standing ovation. And as you noted, there are people like Alan Forel who will love this match to death. So there is certainly an audience for this kind of thing. It's not me.
That's not Barry Allen. Allen's getting upset.
I'm not trying to bury Allen.
Thinks I'm burying him too much.
I am not burying Allen. If Allen likes this stuff, that's wonderful for him. It's wonderful for Dragon Gate. It kind of sucked for me.
Maybe because Allen's so positive, I want to see if I can get a rise out of him sometimes.
Well, we are dicks.
BB Hulk and Masaki Mochizuki for the Open the Freedom Gate title. That's the Dragon Gate USA championship because it's the land of the free.
Right.
Freedom. Anyway. My first complaint actually has nothing to do with the match or the pay-per-view. BB Hulk needs to grow his hair back.
I'm sure he'll get right on that.
I mean, like, immediately. He lost a hair match, and so he's bald. And kind of looks like Hakushi without the tattoos.
A little bit, actually. Yeah, he's got the white pants.
Yeah.
Japanese.
Just, I don't want to say he's like Samson, where he loses his hair and he loses all of his powers. But he needs his hair back, like, immediately. So anyway, they had a when you think Dragon Gate, I think a lot of people think of, like, Dragon Kid doing a lot of flips. You know what I mean? Or, you know, whatever the case might be. He didn't get that here.
But what he got here is something else.
Yeah. Here was just like, they had a strong style wrestling match, which is noted involved working over the leg for about 15 minutes and then not selling at all during the comeback. And one spot that really pissed me off was he gets his leg worked over for 15 minutes or whatever. He starts making his comeback, and like before the comeback started, the announcers are like, he can't put any weight on that leg. So, like, 2 minutes later, he's running, jumping, and doing springboards, as I noted. Totally fine. And the one that really got me was when he did a moonsault off the second turnbuckle of the post to the outside, and he landed with both feet on the concrete floor and did not sell it at all. What?
Yeah. No, they sold nothing in this match. This was one even.
Well, they sold the entire time during the heat, but once the heat was over, the selling stopped.
I guess, but yes, this even more than the prior matches where I decided there needs to be a rule that at some point in this match you must be losing.
What are you talking about? Mochizuki was or Hulk was losing for like 80% of this match.
Until
he came back.
All I saw was each guy they would literally take turns hitting big moves.
Well, that was what happened at the end. But yeah. BB Hulk got worked over for like 10 minutes, got his knee worked over. They did a whole bunch of spots. He made his big comeback. And
the prior match may have worn me out.
The match was missing something. I think it was the hair, to be honest with you.
Yeah, the hair, it was missing. It's not for me.
It was a long night. Long night of a lot of moves. The fans were kind of quiet. But
I am always tired by the end of Dragon Gate shows.
They worked very hard. They did all their stuff. Traded a bunch of strikes, and BB hit an EVO off the top. Mochizuki kicked out. He followed up with a Phoenix Splash. Mochizuki kicked out of that. And then BB Hulk super kicked him right in the face, killed him, and got the pin. So that was the main event of the show. He retained the title. And then we got a strange angle where a zombie got in the ring, and they said, she's one of BB's dancing girls from Phoenix. I have no idea how they knew that. Perhaps the girl died, and she was dug up here, and that's how they recognized her. But regardless, she zombies, she lurches into the ring, and she distracts BB, and then Shingo, Yamato, and Jon Moxley run out, and they beat the crap out of him, and they said that they'd taken everything from him, including his hair and his dancers, and now they were going to take his title. And that was the end of that. So, there you go. That's Dragon Gate pay-per-view. Two other comments here. One's a positive, one's a negative. The negative is that the announcers... I thought that the announcers largely did a good job on this show.
Oh, I agree.
I think they largely did a good job. My only complaint is that... this was most notable to me in the main event. Sometimes the announcers would just all of a sudden go into this mode where they did nothing but scream the names of moves. To me, the announcer's job is to tell me the story of the match. Tell me what's happening. Tell me what's important. Tell me little clues here and there that may pay off in the end. I don't want to just hear, like, EVO! Galleria! It was just like, for a while, it was just screaming one name of a move after another. I realized a lot of moves were being done, but I don't really care what the names of half of them are. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I want to know the story of the match. Like, if he hits this move, is this one of his main finishes? You know, what does it mean when this guy kicks out of this move? These are the things that I need to hear. So that was one thing that hopefully they can fix for the next show. A big positive is they add some of the Japanese guys doing promos. And Shima actually opened up the show and did a promo entirely in broken English. And he's improved dramatically in his English. And the people just go nuts when he does his promo in English. That was good. Maybe too good.
Wish I actually wrote down what he said.
I wrote down what he said. He said, well, first off, he's doing this promo just playing cheerleader to open up the show. And Gargano comes out and starts talking about how great he was and how he wants a match. And Shima says, and I quote, Johnny Gargano, what are you talking about? Are you serious?
That was great.
How about my English? And then everybody cheered.
Yes. Do you have the last thing he said on there?
I don't think I have the last thing. It was something about, if you want to fight, we can have one right now.
You want to fight me? Right now? Okay.
Awesome.
It was great.
The only problem is if he keeps learning English, WWE is going to sign him. So you need to discourage his English speaking if you want to keep him around. But the other thing is they had other guys that don't speak English, and they were cutting their promos in Japanese, and they, in fact, had subtitles. Comical ones at that. Maybe it's comical because they said what they said.
I believe it was Yamato who referred to his opponents as, "You bean sprout guys."
Awesome. So anyway, that's the Dragon Gate pay-per-view. It airs on Friday night on demand, the secondary channel, and Saturday on demand, the main channel. The show's only like $14.95, maybe $19.95. Again, if you normally watch, you know, there have been some boring WWE pay-per-views, and there have been some god-awful TNA pay-per-views.
This is much better than the TNA pay-per-view.
I command you to buy this show just for the four-way, a 10-star match. You can pay $14.95 for a fucking 10-star match. I'm telling you right now. So anyway, get this and get the PWG Night 2 for the other 10-star match that I saw involving Ricochet. So, yeah, there you go. I'm going to do a couple quick shout-outs here before we wrap it up here today. These, of course, are people who have already signed up, unlike you freeloaders, and they're telling you here why you should be the next person that signs up for the website. All right, this is from Tal. Brian, I've been a member for 2 years. I'm just now getting around to sending my shout-out. Congratulations to you and Dave and the whole gang for a great site. I'd like to plug Up North Radio on pwchronicle.com, a great podcast hosted by Rick Finch and Cal Burnside, where listeners can hear TNA Impact dissected and ridiculed each and every week. Please,
sounds familiar.
Please shriek the next line indignantly. You are listening to Up North Radio on pwchronicle.com. Who could possibly care? I'd like to use my remaining 54 words to recognize the top 10 Up North Radio listeners of the month. Brian from BS with Honor, Steve from BS with Honor, Johnny P, Corey Baird, subscriber here, Don from Maryland, number 5 is Ben, Exodus from Dublin, hopefully that's close enough, Matt from San Diego, Dave from Omaha, and Ush from Murfreesboro. Thanks, great show, good night everybody. That's from Tal.
Thanks, Tal.
This is from Steven. Brian, longtime fan, originally from New Orleans, currently a musician in Nashville. Just want to say that your shockingly awesome taste in music, Blind Lemon, Robert Johnson, etc., is startling compared to the awful tastes of most pro wrestlers. Example, Shawn Michaels loves Rush. Oh, God.
Not a Rush fan?
That actually makes me very disappointed in Shawn Michaels.
Are you going to start a campaign to get him out of the Hall of Fame?
No, I'm going to start a campaign to show him some good music. He lives in fucking Texas, for Christ's sake. He's listening to Rush. Bravo, and consider joining some jamming some Towns Von Zandt sometime. I don't know if you did an audio show career retrospective of Dr. Death Steve Williams yet, but I think the American wrestling fans should still find his disturbing, stiff style in Japan interesting in the modern area. It's very close to an MMA style of working shoots, as you know, and Stan Hansen rules.
Steve Williams did, in fact, beat the fuck out of a lot of people.
Yes, he did.
That is true.
That is from Steven. Thank
he
you very much,
He was a
Steven.
Giant, terrifying man.
It's from Michael Barton. Just got to say, this is the best $11 I spend every month.
Isn't that Bart Gunn?
Actually, it is. Mike Barton. We've been listening, or I have been listening to older shows suggested by members of the Empire. I had a couple of rough years, and between the board and the Brian and Vinny show, everyone involved has made me laugh harder than I have in a long time. I've had the honor of having a few of my columns make the front page. Always feels like an honor and privilege when it happens. Keep up the great work. Shout outs to Granny, Team EKH, and everyone who posts on the board. There's comedy gold all over the place, and I hope one day to make it to one of the get-togethers. So, Michael, I do hope you make it to one of the get-togethers
someday.
You
will have fun.
Fuck yeah, you'll have fun. If you sign up, everybody, you get to hear about all the awesome get-togethers, and we've had some awesome ones. It's from Martin. Thanks to everybody who responded to my thread about attending the USC events this past weekend in Boston. It was nice to see the board can actually be used for good instead of shenanigans. Oh, this Martin. I met Martin in Boston. Fine man. Great to meet Brian, Dave, and everyone else at Boston Beer Works. All hail Joe Lazan, put on one of the greatest ass kickings I've ever seen. Shout out to all the others who were sitting behind my sister and I in the $350 ticket section after moving down from the balcony. Four fights, Boston? Even more than Philly? Should I be proud or ashamed? Thanks to Tito and his gargantuan head. My God, his fucking head was huge. For sticking around late at the expo for pictures, formal vertical leap challenge to Dan Hardy. I tied his vertical of 35 inches barefoot at the GI Nutrition booth. With sneakers on, I'll beat that Brit. Check out my articles on prosportsblogging.com/author/MHM Foster. That is from Martin, Marty Marr, 53, in Boston. We had a great get-together at the Boston Beer Works till I vomited that night. Mm. It's from Ben, claiming my free shout-out for bringing new life to the Empire. Rowan Bloor was born on the 20th of August, has brought joy and happiness beyond words to my good lady and myself. My shout-out is to my other son, Ollie, who's just started watching wrestling with me. Thanks to discovering my DVD collection, he already knows Shawn Michaels was the best, Sheamus is great, and that TNA sucks. Thanks for the hours of audio that make changing late-night nappies bearable. Viva la Empire. That's from Ben, chair shot, very occasionally on the board. It's from Jason. My God, we've got a lot of them.
I guess so.
Realized during a recent Brian Vinny show, I failed to take advantage of a free shout-out, so here goes. After I had the pleasure of briefly meeting Brian in Houston during WrestleMania weekend right after the ROH show Saturday night, and right before the Hall of Fame ceremonies, I began listening to the free Observer radio shows every other Monday, and also the free Brian and Vinny shows. I then realized I couldn't get enough of both, so I signed up in December 09. Not regretted $1 spent nor 1 minute spent listening since signing up. As a minister... Uh-oh. Spend a great deal of time preparing sermons, or in wrestling vernacular, extended weekly promos. I found that listening to the shows helps me in phrasing promos, sermon material, making sure I've been clear and have a direction, taking TNA criticism to heart, as well as saying things in such a way that doesn't lose the audience. Again, advice received from listening to your shows. In fact, I have found myself saying things like, why, you don't say, and no buys, during interactions with parishioners. I am now trying to work in Gold Boat in an upcoming sermon. Well, I'll talk about Noah. Further, I have a good amount of senior citizens, have even dropped a Granny's Gang reference to our older ladies' Sunday school class. Between the show, song drops, Felebration being a personal favorite, and content, it's the best value for my money. You all are doing a great job and have my thanks. Actually, the Ark of the Covenant may have been a Gold Boat. Perhaps you can talk about that. If you guys are ever in the Houston area, we have a couple of very large Texas-sized Chinese food buffets that would rival anything you guys have, and I'd love to treat you to. Again, thanks for the fantastic work. Keep on putting out great audio. Know there are grateful people listening. That is from Jason Hess, a man of God.
He is on our side.
It's from Kenny.
Pray for us, Jason.
BNV, it's Kenny here, longtime member, only getting around to cash in my shout-out now. Big shout-outs to Brian and Craig for being awesome company to watch WrestleMania live with. Kenny. Remember, Kenny. Sitting with you two fine men was surely the best seat in the house. May have, in fact, been the best time I had all time all my life. Oh, it's very nice. I actually have those pictures up on my Facebook still. To the entire FRW crew I met at the Postmania dinner, great men one and all. To Vinny for the famed bowling pin picture. To Granny for endless amusement.
That's my contribution.
The t-shirt and accepting me into the gang. To Chael Sonnen, simply for being Chael Sonnen, the best money-drawing promo on the earth. Major shout-outs to my heterosexual life partner, Big Dave Rogers, a fine man who should surely start a faction with Big Dave Meltzer and Big Dave Batista. And lastly, to my stablemates in the VHS Society, Neil Marshall and his dear wifey. Lastly, good, solid, hearty, vintage fuck-offs to my brother Niall for not loving Chael Sonnen, to Vince Russo for lockbox matches and that fucking retarded accent, Eric Bischoff, Vince McMahon, and everyone in wrestling who's letting the industry burn down around them while claiming there's nothing they can learn from MMA in 2010, and to TNA for just being TNA. Fuck you, Dixie, just fuck you. Viva la Empire. Kenny.
That last one?
One more.
Okay, good.
Cotrere.
Oh, excellent.
It's got a good finish here, too. Brian and Vinny, just wanted to send this in to let everyone know about my massive F4W compilation update that should be posted by the time this gets read. All the Brian and Vinny rewinds for 2009 and the next 9 volumes of TNA Adrenaline Flush covering December 09 through August 2010 are now up in the radio show section of the board. Also, I'm happy to announce the newest compilation called To the Back in the Day is up as well. Basically, it's just a collection of all the B&V WWE classics on demand reviews put together, and the first three volumes are up now. Also, me and Sid Bad did an interview with Evad Sullivan Tuesday night on Pro Wrestling Flashback. Talked about his career in WCW and proceeded to bury guys like Hogan, Flair, Bischoff, and DDP. It was great! Check it out at superfriendsuniverse.com/PWF. And this Friday, me, Ed, and Craig will be joined by Kazarni on Over the Top Radio, which can be found at blogtalk.com/Edward-Laredo. P.S. Fuck Alan Ray Sarvin. That is from Cotrere. For those of you unaware, Al Snow did in fact yell at Cotrere on the show one day. Kids, that is it. I am totally out of time, as they say. I'm going to play one last quick song. See if I can find the quickest one here. And then we're going to wrap it up. This one is 31 seconds and a classic. Remember this one, Vinny?
No.
One of these days, it's going play. How can anyone be sad hearing this?
This is a happy little ditty.
C'est les Français fantastiques.
Yay! 2 o'clock in the morning. I still gotta do the SmackDown report for Dave. It's been an hour and 20 minutes.
Stop recording.
Bye, everybody.
Right now. Stop recording.
Goodbye.
Click the button.